and welcome. You're watching We the People. I'm Sonal Mehrotra Kapoor. For 15 months, students have been out of the classrooms. For 15 months, no sports or art. 15 months, the longest interaction students have had is with their computer screen. And that also, if they were privileged enough to have one. But now, as offices, malls, even bars and gyms reopen, the focus needs to shift on reopening of schools and classrooms. Experts time and again have pointed out on children's psychological, physiological, even mental well-being being at stake over here. And the reopening of school, remember, is a complex decision. So on We the People today, we discuss some solutions. How do we prepare to open schools safely for the students of this nation? Joining us on the program on this debate will be Abhishek Gupta, is a Chief Operating Officer for UNICEF. Joining us is also Shaheen Mistry, founder, Teach for India. Dr. Mahesh Balsekar with us. He's the consultant pediatrician, SRCC, Children's Hospital in Breach Candy Hospital. And we have Yamini Iyer with us as well. She's the president and CEO of CPR. But along with that, we have this program dedicated to the students. It is you, the students, for whom this conversation is being held. And I'm very delighted to have some of them joining us on the program today. In fact, let's begin by getting in a word from them. If I can go to Anaya, a class 12 student. Anaya, when we spoke with you earlier, you spoke very passionately about the toils, really, of attending online classrooms. Tell us what's been the hardest part so far.
Right. So I'm Anaina, and I think the hardest part of being in online school has been no social interaction. Like ma'am said, we're stuck on our screen, at least those privileged enough to be, and that has seen an increase in anxiety, stress, a 50% in secondary students in terms of depression because of the lack of social interaction that we have. And I think personally speaking to being restrained to 5 members of my family, while it has been wonderful to spend time with them, it has also increased my social anxiety, going out into public, going out in social spaces where I'm supposed to interact with more than 10 people has been tough. And I think that's one of the main issues that is also being seen in a lot of places, in a lot of schools as well.
Sure. Well, nicely said, that one. If I can go to Abhishek first on this one. Abhishek, Anaina has been articulate enough to at least acknowledge the problem, talk about it, and probably she's one of those who will get a solution as well. We're talking about so many students right now who don't even acknowledge. We're talking about so many students who we are not even sure when the schools reopen will be able to join back. Talk to me first about what is an ideal formula of really opening up classrooms. What is the way forward? What should be a line of thinking?
Yeah, I think Anaya was amazingly articulate. See, our view is that government is right in being cautious about opening up schools with wave 3 looming on our heads. It's possible that schools may not open until it's deemed safe by experts. And that might mean the entire academic year 21-22. Obviously, the COVID appropriate behavior is going to be necessary, but it is eventually we are going to be driven by the experts when they can open. What I want to offer, though, is that we will have to also think of some plan Bs. If the schools do not open, if the academic and other education gets impacted, is there a way that we could do something fun and engaging while the kids are at home? And can we do maybe life skills, and can we do it in a manner that it is engaging enough? And that's something that I would love to talk about maybe a little later in the program as
Right.
well.
Right. So you're talking something of a hybrid model. How do you prepare to open up? I want to sort of shift the focus now. And Shaheen, if you can come in on that one, on what exactly, how exactly do we reimagine the classrooms now? It's not going to be easy. We've already got Dr. Guleria say very categorically that perhaps vaccines are the way forward. We are talking at a time when two states, Telangana and Andhra Pradesh, both are contemplating very seriously about opening schools. In fact, Telangana, for the benefit of our viewers, actually said that they will open schools from the 1st of July with 50% capacity. That was recalled because students and parents, beg your pardon, and teachers decided to protest against it. Now, it is a complex issue, like I said right at the onset, but are there workable solutions that we should be moving towards?
Sonal, I think the protests are so understandable. You know, the health of our kids are our most precious thing ever. And yet I think the more invisible crisis, the generational crisis of education is not as visible. And I think we must look at that and hold the and. It is time now to prioritize health and to prioritize learning. How do we do it is the real question. Mm-hmm. And my answer to that is we have to prepare as of today. And if you break that down, I think we need to consult health experts on when to reopen. Mm. We need to not reopen our classrooms, as you said, in the way that they were before. We need to stagger them. We can open even at 25%. We need to put safety protocols in place and train our teachers, our parents, our kids to be able to uphold those. And I think most importantly, we need to envision a bridge program. Hmm. You know, countries around the world have done this successfully. Advice is prioritize content, small group learning, bring in extra hands on board. But we must do that because our kids need socio-emotional learning. They need less content. They need to catch up and they need a chance to sort of process the trauma of the year. Hmm. And finally, if I might add one more thing, mm-hmm. I think it's such a beautiful opportunity to reimagine education, to say, let's expand the purpose of education. We've seen how the pandemic has brought out in some ways the best of humanity. Hmm. Can we bring that into our schools? Can we rethink assessment? Can we rethink the way our children learn?
Rethink board examinations really, altogether. Yeah. That's a conversation that has already begun, I guess, now. But you talked about taking a note from experts on how to do this best. So on that note, let me bring in Dr. Mahesh Balsekaria. Dr. Mahesh, we've been, like I said, Dr. Guleria already pointed out on how vaccines are going to be the way forward. But do you think that is such a crucial thing? Lots of experts we've been talking to talk about how school teachers, school staff need to get priority maybe at this point. Like Shaheen was also saying, have staggered entry, have 50% classroom first. Do not let go of online classes altogether. Have a hybrid model and warm yourself gradually into going back to school. It's not going to be easy even mentally for kids to do so.
So there are clear guidelines as to how and when schools should be open, and these have been well described. For example, it is said that two criteria are used. One is the percentage positivity. That means if you test 100 people, how many are going to test positive? Hmm. And second is the infection prevalence rate, that out of 100,000 people in the community, how many are infected? Hmm. And there are five grades which are. For example, the positivity rate of less than 3 is considered the best and more than 10 the worst. The number of cases less than 5 per 100,000 the best and more than 200 the worst. Hmm. Now, every government will have to formulate its own guideline as to when schools are going to open. I think there's still time for us to be ready for that because as we know that with the more vigorous, virulent variant Delta and the Delta Plus, people are expecting the third wave, which may come up anywhere between August and November, according to experts. But I think the point is that preparation has to start now because you can tell a mall or an office or a restaurant that you open next week and then be ready to open. But schools take time. And as you said, the teachers were unwilling and the parents were unwilling. So I think you have to start the preparation now and that's going to take several months. As to how are you going to open schools? How are you going to stagger? How are the schools going to disinfect and keep things ready? If there's an outbreak in the family or in the school, how are you going to manage? So schools are going to need a lot of hand-holding. And unless this system is established, it's going to be very difficult to announce that the schools are going to open on July 1st. It's impossible. Nobody is going to accept it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of effort has to go creating the infrastructure, to handhold schools to open, and positive messages have to be given to the parent that if and when the government starts schools, if the general experience in Scandinavia, US, Australia has been that when schools have opened, the prevalence of infection among schools and school teachers has been extremely low. So I think schools should be the first to open and the last to close. And I think this positive message
and I think
has
in
to be
India, there is the horror of the past. We saw what happened immediately when schools opened after the first wave. We saw those super spreader events come out in Telangana and other places as well. And I think people, parents, students, they haven't forgotten that altogether. So we need to really prepare ourselves to not repeat those mistakes as well. That should be a priority. Now, let me quickly get an opening comment from Yamini Iyer as well. Then I'll go back to the students and get a word from them. Yamini.
You know, I think it's so important that we are having this conversation. What has particularly worried me over the last year and a half is that schools were the first thing to close in early March of 2020, before we were even talking about a lockdown. And over the course of the year, we have experimented with many different ways of opening up sometimes closing down when surges come, etc. But the conversation of what's happening to our schools and what the future is going to be has just not been had. The only two issues that we've debated in the public domain about education, one has been this question of digital. And all of your guests here who know much more about teaching than I do will tell you that a computer, an iPad, a laptop, a telephone is no substitute for a classroom and a teacher interaction with students. And secondly, we've talked about examinations. So when the board examination issue came up, should they be cancelled? Should they not be cancelled? At that point, there was mass mobilization. Parents, teachers, politicians, everybody was part of that debate. But it really has surprised me that for all that talk of digital and exams, the real issue of our children, the classrooms, the psychological consequences, the real learning that children have in schools has not been part of the public discourse. So the question of when schools can open will only be effectively discussed when we as a society are willing to say we value schooling, we value education, and as much as we value the economy opening up because it's essential to our everyday, we also believe it is crucial for schools to open up. We must find a way, we have to find a way that will ensure that our politicians, our government, our pedagogists, our educationists will find answers, because as Dr. Balasekar just said, in many other countries, schools were the last to close and the first to open. So the absence of a parental, a teacher, an educationist, and a political conversation on schooling speaks to the deep silence, and it's a deeper structural challenge with Indian democracy. We do all, enrollment rates are very high now in India. We do value education. Parents are sending their children to school. But it's not an active demand of our state, of our politics, of our society. When we have that, we will start talking about schools being open. And once, when we start seriously discussing opening up schools, that's when a very important conversation has to be had.
I get what you're saying. You're saying there needs to be a change in the mindset, and the priority of reopening of schools really need to set into the governments who are taking these calls as well, which is not happening so far. I think they're simply trying to avoid a super spreader event. That's the mentality. Let students not be infected. I think the conversation needs to change to how do we get students back into classrooms safely? That is the conversation that needs to happen now. And on that note, let me bring in some other student voices as well. I'm told we have Raghavendra Yadav with us. Raghavendra, you have a question?
I don't have a question as such, but I really need to highlight, the learning losses we as a country are facing right now. There is something like the pandemic has pushed a lot of people into poverty. And coming from a slum community in Bombay, the pandemic made me migrate twice, my family, and we are again back into my village. We rely on daily wages, and it is just hard for us to make a living. And at that particular time, education for us is not just a foremost priority. So you can really understand how this might have affected many children in our nation. And coming back to, something we are missing something really big in the long term. I was reading something in the morning, and we are currently one of the youngest countries in the world, with our median age of population being just 28.43 years, which means that half of a percentage of our population is below the age of 28. That means so many working force are going to enter, workforce. We have a strong potential of capitalizing the global opportunity we have, but we haven't produced skilled labor yet. And that is why it is urgent for us to reopen schools in a very safe manner. And this is not something that can be recovered back. You know, our students have been pushed 10 years back from their current learning levels. And that is why we need to ask tough questions to our society and to ourselves also. You know, in times when elections can be held, you know, rallies can be organized, sports events can be taken with so much money in being invested in that, then why can't we put our best foot forward for our students and use the best resources to make this happen?
Okay.
And that's why, like, just two questions that we need to ask ourselves, and we need to treat this as an emergency and as a war-like situation in which we as students, educators, and as society have to fight together, and we have to put it all on the line for our students.
Right. Well, I just want to say that if a lot of students started thinking, speaking, perhaps even talking the way Raghavendra is, our future is not going anywhere. Lovely to hear these voices, really. But Shaheen, do you want to take that? Because while, you know, a lot of people are now saying that, yes, reopen school and we miss school, these are the same set of people who petitioned to the Supreme Court saying that examinations can't take place. I'm not saying two are a parallel at this point, but there is a lot of anxiety. I think the intent is there that schools should open, but there is no confidence right now that it'll happen in the right manner.
You know, again, I think the biggest job that all of us have is to understand the fear. Fear is so real. Hurt is so real. It's so hard to look beyond that. I think two things can help. One is really the right information. Like, I do think medium and long-term impact is harder to see than short-term impact. So how do we continue to raise our voices, listen to more children, listen to parents, teachers, really put the right information out there? And the second, just building again on Dr. Balsekar's point, is we need to give people time. We need to give people time. We need to communicate openly that this is the plan. These are the precautions. Take people along slowly. It is no surprise that today there will be great opposition. But 2 months from now, if we take these steps, my hope is that the opposition comes down and we're not seeing this as a polarizing issue, but we're on the same side of the table.
Right. Abhishek, very quickly, I want to come to you. You know, when we floated the plaque about this program, I had a mother who wrote to me and said that, you know, as a parent, all I have to say about this issue is that today my child doesn't have a playground, my child doesn't have a friend, and I am forced to even let him go back to the screen for recreational activities, for entertainment as well. I don't know what to do. At the same time, if you were to ask me, and it's a very honest confession, she, that at the same moment, if you were to ask me to let him go and take the exam, I would lock the door and not let the child step out. So I am caught in a situation where I don't know what to do. And while that is the reality of a lot of urban parents, or if I can, you know, just use the term, a more privileged parent, the reality in our rural towns is much deeper, where even nutritional impact is now coming out in studies of students who have not been able to go back to schools.
Well, no, you're right. I think this is a issue that is splitting us as parents, as educators. And people have this, you know, the fear psychosis here is real with government, and I don't fault government on this. I think as UNICEF and UWA, what we basically trying to do is to see what are the alternatives and plan B that is available while experts tell us. So I'll tell you, a month and a half back, we spoke with a large number of children, primarily coming from disadvantaged backgrounds. What we heard from them was that they wanted to engage in this fight against COVID. We started a program called Young Warrior, started with a low tech but very high spreading, say WhatsApp bot and IVR kind of technology. In last 1.5 months, more than 1 million young people have joined this campaign. My point of telling you was this, that if we were to, and Shaheen said that, this is also a great opportunity to look, reimagine education. Now think about this, that, you know, academic education is suffering and only so much can be done from home, particularly for disadvantaged strata of the society. But could we now think about something like a life skills education, which can be fun and engaging, can be done from home, and we could create a curricula which on WhatsApp bots and through IVR can reach out to 200 million young people, of which 70-75% are actually on WhatsApp. right? Okay. And we are at this point in time working on that model that might start, we're calling it Young Warriors Program.
So Abhishek, I hear you. You're saying try and make the most of it. Don't be in a rush, but try and make the most of what you have as well in terms of online education as well. But I'm not sure how that really plays out with students who are so desperate to really go back to the classroom right now. In fact, on that note, let me bring in some quickly some voices as well. We've got Muskan, Soumya and Samarth. If you can all go around with your experiences so far in that order. Muskan, please.
Hello, thank you so much. Hi, I'm Muskan. I'm a spoken word poet at Slam Out Loud. I think that I can express myself best through poetry, so I'd just like to share a few lines from my poem. I'm just a bird who calls the cage her home. Now the sky is filled with an invisible toxic, totally unknown. I try to reach for love and all I get in return is a smooth surface pretending to be someone else. I see my future coughing like a forlorn victim falling like a trail of dominoes. My mother, who's a primary school teacher, she found out that a lot of her children could not attend online classes for a very long time. Yeah. And when she finally got a chance to interact with them, she found out that the children who were able to read and write before the pandemic hit could not even recall basic alphabets. This is not just about academics. Our teacher-to-student ratio is 1 is to 1400 and students receive less than 20 hours of art education. And it has become really, really challenging for both students and teachers to put together virtual learning in art-based learning in virtual classes.
Right.
Also,
I must say, Muskan, and I'm only interrupting you because I quickly want to take in Soumya and Samarth's voice as well before we hit the commercials. Soumya, Samarth, very quickly, please.
Hi, I'm Soumya. And I think if I had to say in just one sentence, right, what has the effect of pandemic been? I would say lack of access and exposure. Mm-hmm. Lack of access for 60% of the students, right? They're not even a part of the education system since the pandemic started. Mm-hmm. And lack of exposure for the 42% who do have access. Mm-hmm. A study
nicely
done by Azim Premji
nicely
University
said, yeah.
has said that 80% of teachers don't even feel a connection. And right. I think just two things if I can say quickly. One would be that these are not just statistics which you're throwing around. There are actual humans behind it. So we have to remember that and keep that in mind.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, if we can get our economy back up, if we can open restaurants, we can open bars, why are we not putting in the same resources, the same efforts into opening up our schools and our education system? Parents.
Well, I really believe that the education minister should be listening to all these students, not as journalists and experts at all, because some great suggestions are coming out of them. I have last 15 seconds, really. So I want Samarth to quickly wrap up and tell us what exactly, according to him, needs to be done. What do you think students really need at this point?
Well, I agree with all the points posted before about how there is a very detrimental impact caused to each of our mental health. I would like to point out the plight of those students who actually cannot access online education. It is said that only 24% of Indian households have access to internet, which means that such a wide category of my friends out there have been deprived for education for the past 15 months and counting. With every month, we are delaying the reopening of schools. We are depriving them of education. And their miseries do not end here. In fact, many of them are being pushed into issues like child labor, are being forced to engage in child marriages as they are out of school. I believe that 15 months were long enough. We all have suffered. We all have missed school. We all are no longer, part of physical and social activities. And it is high time that just like how every other sector of our economy has opened, just like how 90% of countries have reopened their schools.
I hear you. And I hear the voices of so many other students at this point who are so desperate to go back to the classroom and parents who are equally scared. But like our panelists have been suggesting as well, there has to be a mindset shift followed by action and a detailed plan that needs to come out. Something that we'll wait for the government to really look into. But this is the debate that we will keep on the channel, at least for now. That's it on We the People. We'll join you again next week. Good night for now.